Good afternoon to all of you. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been almost exactly 2 months since we last had reached out. And we thought, given everything that's gone on, given that we appear to be on the downside of this nasty virus, and we've started to see in some economies the process of inching towards some notion of normality, that this would be a good time to reach out and to share some of our thoughts. And so what I'd like to do is start just recap what's happened since we last got together. Market reaction, as well as how some of the things that we had been expecting have played out. I then want to talk a little bit about some of the investing considerations and the environmental issues that I think will form the backdrop before getting into some of the very specific implications for financials as well as the opportunities. So end of May, we are now at the stage where amazingly the broader markets, certainly as characterized by the S&P, are almost a rounding error off of pre-lockdown highs, and we've certainly seen similar reactions in broader markets elsewhere. No doubt, driven in large part by an extraordinarily accommodative monetary and fiscal situation, as well as some real outperformance by certain sectors of the broader markets. We don't need to rehash now, but I suspect as active as we were with online shopping before this thing, we've all set personal records in the amount of Amazon deliveries that have made their way to our residences. The market response in financials has been somewhat more mixed. We've certainly seen a recovery, and if you recall back a couple of months ago, we said that high quality names would likely be the first to come back, and sure enough, you know, that's what we've seen. We've seen healthy bounces in a number of debt and individual equities, but large sectors of the market, in particular in Europe, have underperformed considerably, and there's really a couple of reasons for that. First and foremost, I think we've had, in great European fashion, we've had less transparency around exactly you know, the nature of provisioning and just how much economic damage has been done in a number of jurisdictions, and so I think it's you know, there's very naturally been a bit of caution around the sector. Second, I mean, many of the names that have underperformed are very much second tier names, wouldn't be widely held, and certainly not as actively traded in the markets as kind of the larger global names. So certainly the story on the market side, I think, is a very, very constructive one. We've seen such a recovery in the broader market that one would caution that perhaps we've already discounted a considerable amount of the recovery. Now, I mentioned policy response as one of the drivers, and certainly we alluded to it 2 months ago as something to keep an eye on. And since then, it's almost seemed a global battle of central banks to see, you know, who could be the first to cut, and who could cut more deeply, and who could be the first to be getting into different asset classes, and for the Fed to be reaching into high yield and ETFs, and for the ECB to follow suit. And of course, we've seen a considerable amount of fiscal stimulus as well, not just in support programs for furloughed workers and lines of credit for businesses, real pump priming stuff really capped off by what we've seen in Europe just this week with the announcement of the new EU-wide fiscal package that we'll see grants being made across countries that have been hardest hit by this terrible virus, as well as some additional loans, and then of course, you know, we've also had a bit of regulatory response that has been very much constructive for the sector. So short-term capital relief, delays in IFRS 9 provisioning, and while there's been a push to clamp down on dividend payments, and banks have been exhorted to hoard capital, in 2008-09, the sector has seen some constructive capital targeted regulatory actions. And so we kind of find ourselves at an interesting inflection point as we look towards an economy that will start reopening, but with a new normal still to be defined, with a backdrop of monetary conditions and liquidity conditions that have taken very much already friendly characteristics and amped them up considerably since then. From an investment perspective, this is really a tug of war between the economic reality of really executing an unprecedented cold reboot of from a complete zero into something, you know, that starts to be self-sustaining and will undoubtedly take a long time to get there. I think it will be a very, very long time before unemployment rates approach the levels that we were at the beginning of this year in most of developed economies. And undoubtedly, as we see in typical recoveries, bankruptcies tend to peak long after the economic bottom has been hit. So you have all these sort of economic realities that will play themselves out over the coming months. And yet we have a market that is trading on expectations that, unlike other recessions where there's been credit crunches and a real profound lack of liquidity, I mean, you know, the markets are swimming in liquidity and cash. And so I think, you know, those two environments where the market is racing ahead and will periodically have market reality checks will really characterize the investing environment for the next 12 to 18 months. And of course, the other really important factor here relates to the kind of political and cultural aspects. We have U.S. elections in a little over 5 months that if we think back to the beginning of the year, there was a very strong likelihood that, for better or worse, the status quo was likely to be preserved. I think certainly we have a greater degree of uncertainty as we head into November. We have talked a number of times, both on our last call and in our newsletters, about the future of China relations, and you know, can we get back to even just straightforward attempt to reorder the terms of global trade? There's a risk here that, again, amplified by election year politics, you know, we see further deterioration in the global order of trade, and in fact, continued provocations that will upset any sort of market calm and look to threaten to pour cold water both on markets and economic recovery. And then finally, in Europe, you know, after 10 years of crises and existential threats, you know, we find ourselves really in the last chance saloon here. This crisis has highlighted some deep structural challenges that remain, you know, for the Europeans to resolve. No right answer, except they need to kind of move forward with this. On the one hand, very constructive that we've seen some burden sharing this week. We have to keep in mind that notwithstanding the fact that European leaders will be very quick to declare this crisis over, some deep red lines remain in place and the notion of debt mutualization and the fundamental coming together of a common fiscal order is just simply not on the cards. And so Europe will limp through this with higher debt to GDP ratios than they were 3 or 4 months ago, with damaged economies, and you know, and ultimately with this issue hanging over us as a as sort of the something that will need to be considered. In terms of what that means for financials, we've certainly seen that the sector has benefited considerably from the recapitalization and restructuring that's taken place over the last 10 to 12 years. With very few exceptions, which were problems before this crisis started, the sector remains very well capitalized. Unlikely that we will see a serious issues in any of the banking systems. We will see some problematic names, but capital is generally plentiful, and measures such as the dividend halting will be further supportive for the accumulation of capital. Over the next quarter, we're likely to see further indication of just exactly how bad some of these economies will be hit. We'll also see if attempts to reopen can at least salvage some of Q3 for southern European countries in particular that are very reliant on tourism and related activities. And certainly we'll start to have a better sense of some of the provision specifics across the sector. It remains, given where we are today in comparison to where we were trading in many of these different parts of the capital structure, a very attractive opportunity set. We are certainly focused primarily on the opportunities in subordinated credit, which is an asset class that has underperformed for a whole host of reasons, in part because I think we saw some disrupted securitizations and the whole process of continuing to delever balance sheets had been temporarily disrupted. We fully expect to see that getting back on track. We think the overall supportive credit environment will ultimately see this sector and this part of the capital structure perform very well over the next 3 months, and it remains our number one area of focus. We also are looking over the next 3 months at the AT1 asset class, which again is overall remains attractive just on a raw pricing basis. And even though we've seen some recovery of the severe losses of March, but there's also some interesting two-way opportunities combination of call, no call decisions that are coming up over the next 12 months, some issuer specific potential coupon skips, and there's a whole host of very much issue specific opportunities that will present themselves and certainly within the context of a market that has a lot of opportunity at the absolute return level. Along the same vein, given where we are, we would expect that hefty new issue premiums will remain. We're expecting new issuance, certainly in the order of 50 plus billion euros over the coming months, and this remains an extremely attractive investor friendly opportunity for new issuance. Looking beyond the credit side of the balance sheet, as we get towards the late third quarter and fourth quarter, we'll be faced with questions of whether dividends will be reinstated and share buybacks and other capital repatriation ideas. While we certainly expect that there will be some capital repatriation this side of the new year, I think you have to be very cautious about a blanket lifting of the dividend ban. It just seems that if you fast forward 5 months, the central banks might still be a little bit hesitant to just sort of turn on the taps and see capital flying out the door of financial institutions. And so we're advocating a very issuer-specific approach. We think sort of think of the kind of the quality of the excess capital in the context of underlying business model. So banks and other financials that are not heavily balance sheet dependent, that perhaps have a stronger wealth management or asset management component, will have greater flexibility around their capital repatriation. And we would expect to see some of those names be the first to be giving capital back. And, you know, what you're seeing in some of these names is a considerable amount of the market cap is now sort of backing up as excess capital. And so some very interesting opportunities developing. And then finally, building on the capital repatriation and recapitalization considerations, we think ultimately the revenue generating environment is going to remain extremely challenged. Rates are going nowhere. The willingness of central banks to extend liquidity directly to borrowers, combined with just this very generous liquidity environment, will keep NIM pressure going into 2021, and we think in this situation where you've had such major stresses, that you are likely to see some renewed focus on domestic consolidation rather than the sort of the big cross-border stories that everybody loves talking about, but frankly have virtually no chance of happening in this environment. So we look ahead with a great deal of optimism about the opportunities that are out there. We can't lose sight of the fact that in an environment where you're really being driven by liquidity considerations, very similar to the environment we've been living in for the last 10 years, we have to be mindful of these periodic bouts of volatility that we've seen a number of times over the last 10 years. Think the taper tantrum, bit of tension in geopolitical areas. And because we are dealing in such liquidity-driven markets, you need to be very, very conscious of volatility. And so this isn't an environment to be sort of all in and buy and hold. And this is very much an actively traded and very tactical market that we're dealing with. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions that we might have.
Just as a reminder, if you have any questions, you can submit them via the chat box on the left, the second item on your screen.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Hopefully we are coming to the end of at least this phase of this extraordinary period. Wish everybody continued safety, and look forward to seeing as many of you in person again as possible.
Actually, Jerry, we just got one question. Which is, what would the impact be of a second wave of infections on your predictions?
It's a great great question. I think there's two aspects to that. I think the policy response or the politicians, I think, will be more concerned than the impact would be, and therefore, I think it's more likely to be a sort of a preemptive impact rather than having to go back in to lockdown. I think the fear of a second wave will mean that it will take longer for us to get back to a fully normal, restaurants full, pubs full environment than it would otherwise. And I think this it gets to the very heart of this tug of war, where markets race ahead, but the economic reality is slower, to respond in ways that would validate the market response.